Good morning, everyone. Today I'll be discussing the potential impact of clay pan soils on simulation results for a land surface model. The land surface model we're going to be looking at today is NOAA-MP, or the NOAA land surface model with multi-parameterization options. NOAA-MP has two general processes that are involved with it. The first one is atmosphere and water body exchange processes. This will include things like precipitation, runoff, snowpack. And the second process is going to be land memory-based processes. That will include things like soil moisture flux, heat flux, and vegetation. NOAA-MP is a really well-supported and well-backed land surface model when coupled with the weather research and forecasting model. It has a reach of over 25,000 users, and that's spread across over 130 countries. It's been verified multiple times and is generally a really good model. However, it has a couple of problems. First, to start us off with, last year, Dr. Christine Morgan and Dr. Andrea Kishney had a look at the land memory exchange process portion of NOAA-MP, and specifically, they looked at the hydraulic table that actually initializes the soil textures that are actually input with each soil layer depth. And noticed that the values there were unusual for things like field capacity and wilting point and pore size distribution index. So they updated the table, but in the process they came across another issue, which is what we're talking about today. With depth, they found that while as NOAA-MP actually inputs soil texture at each depth, it actually only uses one soil texture for the entire depth of the simulated profile. So as we all know, this is not really how the real world works. So that brings us to what we're actually going to try and do with this project. Which is to assess the potential effect of how soil texture actually changes with depth and how well the revised table for hydraulic table for Texas actually affects simulated soil moisture and latent and sensible heat. In order to set this up, we had to pick two sites that had specific properties. These sites had to have an abrupt change in clay content so that we can actually see the difference of soil heterogeneity with depth. Also, we needed sites that measured volumetric soil water content over a very long period of time, multiple years, as well as complete weather data measurements for those sites. And we decided to go with U.S. Climate Reference Network's data sites. The first site that from their network that we chose was Palestine, Texas, out in East Texas, near the clay pan area, and our second site we chose was Bronte, which is out in West Texas in the Drylands area. Both of these sites have different moisture regimes, but they still have our abrupt change in clay content. For site one, we see an abrupt change in clay content at from 10 to 20 centimeters. And then in site two, we have an abrupt change in clay content from 20 to 50 centimeters. So in order to actually have a comparison to NOAA's output of soil moisture and latent and sensible heat flux, we needed a model that would help us compare a baseline to show us decent output for soil water content. So we decided to go with USDA ARS's Root Zone Water Quality Model 2. Root Zone RZWQM2 is a process-based, is a 1D process-based model that simulates crop growth and water movement within and below the root zone. And so using this model, we went and set up three scenarios in order to actually test how well the revised NOAA hydraulic table improves soil water content, latent sensible heat. And then we brought that to scenario three, where we actually introduce heterogeneity into our model to see how that actually affects our soil water content as well. So with these in mind, I developed a table, a chart that actually helps us analyze how the soil moisture is actually being output. So I'm going to walk you through this real quick because there's a lot of information here. So starting with soil moisture on the y-axis, we have our blue dot and our red dot. Our blue dot is going to be our measured data. So our blue line is going to be our measured data, and our red line is going to be simulated from RZWQM. So as we actually progress week by week, we can see that the soil water content is fluctuating with the first quartile and the third quartile on a weekly basis with median plotted along with it. Also, what we see here is we see the field capacity from the hydraulic conductivity table that was updated by Dr. Morgan and Dr. Kishney. And then we have our wilting point from the hydraulic table as our lower bound. Then we plot precipitation underneath to gauge how well the soil water content is actually matching up with our dates, with our weekly soil water estimates, and then simulations. And then we go and we put our error on top to see the weekly improvements as we progress from each scenario. So with that, let's delve right into it, shall we? So here we have our 11 to 20 centimeter, at the top of our clay pan in at site one in Palestine, in East Texas. And as we can see, scenario one actually, it's not very well constrained by our field capacity and wilting point with our default NOAA hydrology table and homogeneous soil profile. It's not, RZWQM really isn't able to capture very well the variability of the soil water content. But we improve this variability as we progress to the revised table. But because we're not capturing the soil water content very well by scenario three, because they generally all have the same soil texture. So moving on to the layer just below this, where we actually get to our clay pan, we can clearly see that by scenario two and scenario three, we progressively improve our variability with the revised table, and then when we introduce soil heterogeneity, we move up the wilting point, and we actually match very, very well the measured data using RZWQM to model the soil moisture. So if we actually take a look at the metrics for Palestine, we see that when we actually introduce the revised table into the simulation, we find that we actually capture about 43% of the mean. We reduce of the measured mean data. We reduce error by about 26%, and we actually improve the overall trend by 45%. But when we introduce heterogeneity for this site in particular at this level, we really only improve it just a little bit by between 4, 5, and 9%. As soon as we actually get down to our clay pan layer, our abrupt increase in clay content where the soil texture changes, we really start to see how introducing soil heterogeneity actually improves our simulation results. You can see that, of course, the revised table is actually improving our results. But when we actually introduce that heterogeneity, we actually start capping things out. We capture the mean further, 33%, putting it over 90% improvement over our homogeneous default NOAA scenario for scenario one. We reduce error a further 30%, gives us approximately a 73% increase in reducing error. And then we also improve the overall trend with Nash Sutcliffe by about 26%, which again puts us over a 90% mark. So now we'll move on to site two. Site two, out in West Texas, we have again we have a clay pan scenario. And again, at this soil layer, we have from 11 to 20 centimeters, we have the same texture from the hydraulic tables for each of the scenarios, and the vertical heterogeneity isn't that different from the surface. So by scenario three, there's actually a decrease in improvement from scenario one, despite the fact that NOAA homogeneous actually is able to capture the measure data pretty well. So once we go a little deeper and hit the abrupt change in clay content, we can clearly see that as soon as the clay content increases, the soil water capacity increases, the soil water storage increases, and by scenario two, we increase our variability a little bit using a revised table. But again, by scenario three, in our abrupt textural change, we increase the wilting point with the constrained field with the constrained soil water field capacity, and the model is able to actually simulate the soil water content quite well with what actually is measured out in Bronte. So taking a look at our metrics, as I mentioned before, for the 11 to 20 centimeter level, we're over capturing the mean from the measured content, and we actually increase the error, we worsen the trend, and it doesn't seem like we're doing a very good job. But in comes the heterogeneity, we actually capture the mean back by about 5%. We reduce error from the issues with the revised table, and we actually improve the trend from the revised table by another 44%. So what we should get out of this is the fact that even though we have the revised table isn't helping us here, the heterogeneity is still a major factor in actually improving how well we're modeling soil water content. So again, we go past our abrupt textural change at the 20 to 50 centimeter mark, and we can see similar what we saw in site one. The revised table improves our overall simulation very well, and then when we add heterogeneity, it really caps it off and starts modeling quite well by scenario three. So what's this generally telling us in the end? Basically, as we all know, vertical heterogeneity is kind of important. It improves our trend predictions for soil water content, and it actually does a very good job at reducing error in soil water capacity predictions. In the future, we want to take a look at the latent and sensible heat to corroborate our results with our soil water content, and actually see how well we can actually use this as a baseline to compare with NOAA MP soil water outputs. So with that, I'd like to thank TCEQ for helping fund this, and I'd like to thank USDA ARS for providing RZWQM. And with that, I'll take any questions.